Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, February 27th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back our friend Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen in Schenectady, Troy, New York City, India. Anissa is a world traveler, an entrepreneur, a cookbook author, a philanthropist, a creator of dishes that bring flavors from around the world into her legendary Moroccan menu. Since it is Ramadan, today Anissa will teach me about the food and traditions connected with it. Give us a call if you want to join in the conversation. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Anissa Waheed and your calls coming up on Food Friday Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back one of the coolest people in the world, Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen. With locations in Schenectady, Troy, New York City, Tara Kitchen has been a staple of this region's culinary scene and others for years now. Within the last couple of years, Anissa has opened a Tara Kitchen in India. She is the author of a cookbook entitled Easy Moroccan Cookbook. She's currently working on a pilot program for local school districts to combat xenophobia through food. We'll talk about that in a minute. She's also partnered up with Aramark to do food on their institutional cafeterias. She's always a favorite on this show. I always learn a ton, and we're going to learn a lot today. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Anissa Waheed, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. Good to see you.
You know, I feel like we've done a show already before the show started, just hanging out here chatting.
Yes.
What's new in Anissa world?
Oh, I just want to clarify that we're still in Gilderland.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
But it's changed.
It's changed. We decided, you know, I think last time I was here, we had talked about the changes that we were making in Gilderland, and then now we've kind of sort of made that turn complete.
So you're still there.
We're still there. And what we've done is we've just really focused and grown our catering business, which was the focus when we actually started to move out of doing the dine-in at that particular location. And through there, we've grown catering, and we're now partnered up with Aramark in Albany to actually produce and serve food in their cafeterias.
Lucky them.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited about this partnership. We're also going to be doing some work with them in New York City, so that's kind of exciting.
Tell me about the pilot program. You and I spoke about it just briefly, but
yeah.
It seems like you have something very interesting here.
I'm very excited about this. I think a huge part of me last year was a little bit maybe silenced. Maybe I
find that hard to believe. All right, just
I thought that for myself. There has been a new outburst of hatred, division, and, you know, things that I was seeing and hearing in the news, in the papers, listening to, you know, politicians going back and forth. All of that, as an adult, you're sort of consuming this information and maybe either processing it or not processing it because you have so much to deal with. But something that was really interesting to me was how that was seeping into our schools and how that was affecting kids. I have two teenage daughters in middle school and in high school. And for the first time of their schooling career, we started to really have conversations around, mom, you know, I was told X or Y, or go back, or you're a terrorist, or you're a Muslim, you're dirty, you're brown, your food sucks, this, that. And maybe part of it is they're just coming into this age.
Adolescent annoyance.
Yeah.
But there's more.
But I think there is a little bit more happening. I think we're seeing a lot more of that kind of talk on social media and in media in general. So, you know, I was kind of consuming all of this information and not really understanding how or what I could maybe do about it. I myself faced some of this on my social media pages where people were calling for my deportation.
You've been here a long time.
I don't know where else I've been because it feels like I've been here a long time. You know, my kids were born here. They've been asked to, like, go back to where they came from. Your green card's expired. I mean, we've heard it all this
really?
Year.
From kids?
From kids. Ouch. And this is it's horrifying and also fascinating. So in taking all of this, I, you know, really sat through and thought about how and what I could do and where I could do this.
Yeah.
And the idea started percolating. After connecting with the ICCR, which is the International Center for Cultural uh-huh. Diversity in the Capital Region. Their mission statement really is to bring cultural diversity to us in the Capital Region and also take it out of the Capital Region, like for us to learn about, you know, outside cultures.
Did they come to you or did you go to them?
They came to me. Mm. And, you know, they had been seeing what was happening and some of the things that I'd been talking about on my platforms. And, you know, they approached me and they said, hey, you know, why don't we do something together? And my thought was, I would love to do something together, but I don't want to do this one-off thing. I don't want to have a cultural night where people come and, you know, spend $30 and have cultural food.
Because right.
I don't necessarily think that's going to solve anything. So then they asked me what I was thinking about. And to that end, I've had, you know, we've created, I put together this program in talking to my children, their friends, teachers. I've met with, you know, people in the school district. I've met with the Schenectady school district. I've met with our local congressman, our local assembly member. I've met with people from the governor's office. I've been doing a lot of work on this for the past 2-3 months because I feel very strongly this is something that should be part of schooling, not just as a one-off, we did an international night, but as something that's part of, you know, everyday work. And how we actually do this is what we're currently working on.
How do you think you're going to do it?
I want to do it through food. So I think it's a conversation that starts in the cafeterias, bringing more culinary diversity into the cafeterias, educating kids about where this food comes from, where, you know, how it comes from. I think that's a great place to start. My program is called Home, and the idea that we all sort of belong here and, you know, come from somewhere but end up here, and now this is home. So, you know, what does that mean for all of us? And I want to talk about that through the perspective and the lens of food. So the food that we are eating, where does that come from? Whether it's my food in my home, which comes from either, you know, the traditions of India, Morocco, Pakistan, we're a very, very blended family, or an American food and, you know, European food, all of that. But then they're like, you know, Halim, where does Halim come from? Why do we eat it? And I think food sort of helps put us and keep our cultural boundaries in place when we don't have geographical boundaries. Does that make sense?
No, yeah, you take your boundary with you.
Literally. And I think food is a great way that we do that, right? It might not necessarily be clothing. Like, I'm not walking around the streets in a sari or a shalwar kameez every day, but I'm eating, you know, the food of my homeland or my countries. And I think it's very similar for every person, every family. It doesn't matter what color or background you're from. I think we all have food history that's part of our life because ultimately we all came from somewhere. So I think all the discussions we've had is about having this home program in school that sort of lives as a activity, as a club that's student-run, student-led, has some definition around it. So it's something that I think that the media has to be involved with, I think, local politicians, local community stakeholders. I think it has to be a broader conversation. I
mean, this is a huge endeavor. All right. Now, you're only painting the broadest outline of how it could possibly work in the real world.
Yes.
This is a lot of work for somebody. And I know you'll be doing a lot of it yourself because I know
you. I'm committed to do it. Yes.
And by the way, we're joined by Anisa Waheed today of Tara Kitchen. The number is 800-348-2551. So this home program, you're in talks, you're discussing, but how will it actually work day to day?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the next meetings that are coming forward are going to be with the Department of Education. And again, this is an idea that I have as someone outside of the school systems and outside of programming and outside, right? So I need their help and support in trying to figure out how do we actually implement it into school, something that we've already started at the Nisyuna High School because my daughter is there. Is just talking about Ramadan and fasting and what that means for the kids who are doing this. Because something she said to me earlier on before fasting started was, Mom, I don't really know if I want to fast this year because I don't want kids bullying me about it. I don't want kids, you know, telling me, oh, that's so stupid. How do you do it? You know, so she was sort of worried about this. And, you know, we talked about it. I talked to the chief equity officer about it. And, you know, we talked about doing a little bit more education around this on the radio program in the morning with the Muslim Student Association and with even just the students who are fasting, communicating with their peers and having some posters and banners and those kind of things that's educating kids about why this matters and why it's a choice that they should feel free to have. So there's, you know, it's, yes, you are right. This is absolutely almost like a policy change.
Yeah.
I didn't know that it was kind of going to go in. I thought, you know, when I first started thinking about this and writing this program and really digging my heels into it, I didn't necessarily know that I would get so much buy-in and support from the people that I have reached out to, and I want to get involved in this program. So I think the goal is, ultimately the goal is sort of anti-bullying, right? That's what this is about.
Yeah.
And I have a friend from my high school who runs a very successful anti-bullying program throughout New York State. You know, I've teamed up with him. We've talked about how, and he does his campaign through media, actually. He's a director.
Okay.
So he does it through teaching kids through, you know, making movies and videos and those kind of things. And we have been working together to actually pilot this at a school in Albany, but doing it through food, having kids talk about food that they're eating at home. And where, you know, where does that food come from? Where does the recipe come from? So the idea is not to go in and talk to kids about, hey, you're different, he's different, she's different, now be nice to each other.
Yeah.
The real idea here is to have kids to really look inside, inward, to their foods. Just, you know, something as simple as, what do you eat for dinner? Why do you eat this for dinner? Where does this recipe come from? What, you know, why does mom make this? Or why does dad do this? You know, it's from my grandmother, or it's from, you know, Romania, or it's from, you know, something that we do in Germany, or whatever that might be. We're hoping that it starts that dialogue.
All right, we have to take a break here in a moment. Anissa Waheed is our guest from Tara Kitchen. The number is 800-348-2551. Before we go to the break, you know, you mentioned to me the levels of bureaucracy and paperwork just to get your location in India going. And much of a red tape nightmare that can be. Getting things changed in schools also has levels of bureaucracy.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to actually bring it into action.
Yes.
Okay, well, simple enough. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Anissa Waheed is here. And some country music. Yeah, I don't know, it doesn't really go, but play it anyway. There's Buddy Emmons there on the old pedal steel guitar. It's perfect for our show today. 800-348-2551. Anissa Waheed joins us from Tara Kitchen. Always an amazing, interesting, and surprising start to the show when I ask, what's going on in your world? There's always something new. Joanne writes in to voxpop@wamc.org. Joanna Westmere. Hey, the Gilderland Shop. I live in the area. I heard it's going to close. Is it now just open to caterers? I liked having a nice restaurant within walking distance. Please go into more detail. Your restaurants are local treasures.
Well, I'm so sorry. What was the question?
I blanked out
for a second.
That's a terrible start here. I heard that the shop in Gilderland is closed to catering now.
Yeah.
I love having it. Your restaurants are local treasure. Just go into a little more detail.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Joanne, we looked at all the three locations, and this was a transition that we started last year.
Yeah.
Because of what we were seeing in the market, how consumers were, you know, purchasing and not purchasing and all of that stuff. And I think one of the reasons why we've had some longevity in this area, we've been around for over 14 years now, I think has been our ability to pivot and do what the market wants us to do and needs us to do. And ultimately, when you're looking at, you know, where people are dining, how they're shopping, how they're buying, we really had to make a choice that going in this direction for that particular location made the most sense, not just for the company, but also for, you know, that area. And catering, which was something that we had not really focused on as a business, this location made it possible for us to do that.
Do you like doing that?
That's
a different ball of wax.
It is a different ball of wax, which is why we were never in it, right? Because when you're running a day-to-day sit-down restaurants and, you know, you have your bar program and people coming in and dining, you can't also run a full-fledged catering program. So
right. The
way we always did catering was, you know, someone called and they said, we need food, and we'd be like, ah, sure, okay. You know, almost kind of begrudgingly,
right.
Because you'd have to, like, stop what you were doing for your dinner service to do this. So we made it an intention, and, you know, I'm happy we did that, because last year also was definitely a very challenging year in the restaurant business.
Why?
A lot of reasons, and, you know, there are thousands of reasons why restaurants succeed and fail, and there's, like, so much minutia around it, and, you know, and also to some extent, very specific to restaurants also, like the model, the, you know, style of cuisine, the style, all of it, right? So it's a very, very picky sort of business. And, you know, last year, the challenges were economic challenges. We had uncontrolled price increases in areas that we just didn't know what was going to happen. Sometimes anywhere from, you know, 20 to 48%. And the labor market has always been difficult and challenging, but the cost also rose over there.
Yeah.
And then when when you add consumer spending power reducing, or them being a little bit more conservative in how and where they're spending their money,
right.
All of that affects restaurants, right? I mean, restaurants are one of those things that probably are almost like the canary in the coal mine, where you start to see shifts in the market first, because this is the best, easiest, most loved form of entertainment. So, you know, like for me, the last time I went to a movie was probably 10 years ago.
Yeah,
so
me too.
It's not something I do. But do I go out and eat out all the time for good things, bad things, stress things, you know, happy things, all of that stuff, just want a moment to myself things. So food is a huge part of how we interact in our third place, right? So when you start to see all of those sort of market shifts and us being Moroccan, a very niche market, when people are not traveling into the area as much as they used to, we lose some of that customer, because a huge part of our customer base is travelers, people coming in and out of cities, and they're like, oh, there's a Moroccan restaurant, I haven't seen that before, let me go there, you know? So that's part of that excitement that we get from the tourist people. So we saw all of this stuff, and, you know, you can continue to lean into what you're doing and hope and pray it goes, or you can then say, well, what can I do to try and mitigate for this? And we looked at the entire company in upstate, and we chose Gilderland as the location where we knew that we could make this pivot into catering, because the infrastructure of that building supports it. We own that property. It has, you know, the right kind of basement, the right kind of attic,
yeah,
the right kind of storage, the right kind of parking lot. And so we started to make that transition last year, actually, and I'm very happy that we were successfully able to do that.
You know, Anissa Waheed is our guest today from Tara Kitchen, and we're going to, at some point soon, talk about some of the food and traditions of Ramadan.
Yeah.
I have a lot to learn there, but I could talk business with you for a long time. We also have phones, 800-348-2551. One last business question.
Yeah.
You said, to some extent, the restaurant industry is a canary in the coal mine
yeah.
to changing And yet you, Anissa Waheed, opened up locations during a pandemic when everybody was home. How did you rectify that decision?
Well, you know, again, that was all because of our ability to pivot and be able to do what, you know, during the pandemic, we were really alarmingly successful because we were able to do food in a way that people needed for their homes. So remember, you know, you couldn't go anywhere. Yeah. You couldn't, you know, you couldn't go to the ballpark. You couldn't go to movies. You couldn't So one of the things that we very successfully did was created packages for the family to entertain themselves in their homes.
Yeah.
I also, at that, you know, during the pandemic, was cooking foods from around the world. So a lot of the restaurants that were either choosing not to be open or were closed for whatever reason, we were able to, you know, sort of come in and fill that gap of, hey, we can do Indian for you, we can do Chinese for you, we did Peruvian, we did French, we did all kinds
of
different.
You did all that?
We did all of that.
You never told me that.
Yeah, it was really fun. We, you know, we called it the global passport, and people were. So we were able to figure, again, it's what do your customers need and how can you meet them at that need, so that, you know, it's that delicate balance between what you want to do, what you need to do, and then what does the market need you to do.
Anissa Waheed, I wish the show was 2 hours. Whenever you're on, and sometimes I wish the show was 12 minutes, but when you're on, I wish it was 2 hours. Let's grab one call, and then
okay.
I want to start talking a little about all
Ramadan
this great
feast?
Stuff you
okay.
brought. 800-348-2551. Gabby is in Saugerties. Gabby, you're on.
Hi. I just want to talk to you. I'm a teacher in Pine Plains, New York, and we started a club 3 years ago, me and the English teacher. I'm a math teacher. And what we do is once a month we meet at the local Grange because they're a certified kitchen, and they allow us to use their kitchen, and we bring the kids in, and they bring in recipes from their homes, and we make them and distribute them to local food pantries. They're single serve, easy reheat meals because a lot of people that we serve in our food pantry don't have a way to reheat, or, you know, they don't have a stove or an oven or something. But you're talking about trying to get it into schools. This program has grown exponentially in the last couple of years. The kids are very interested in sharing their recipes. We always test them first and then we try them out. But it's just an idea, and when I was listening to you, and I'm like, that sounds a lot like our club, Flower Power, which we started in our school. So just a thought.
Yeah,
oh, Gabby, thanks.
Yeah, that's really great. You know, I do actually think that kids are super interested in food, and, you know, every time I go, I've done a lot of work in the Niskayuna School District, going to the schools, talking about either food, doing a cooking class, or, you know, bringing some of my food out there, and I'm always, myself and the educators are always fascinated by how much the kids are fascinated by that, which is why I really think, you know, to have this conversation about xenophobia and to have this conversation about us versus them and all of this stuff, I don't think there is a better way to do it than through food.
Gabby, thanks a lot for the call. It's 800-348-2551. All right, two more quick calls, and then we start our lesson here today with Anissa Waheed. Joan is in Schenectady. Hello, Joan. How are you?
I'm doing really, really well, but no pressure, Ray. A quick call?
Come on. You got to make it snappy there, Joan. Come on.
I'm going to. But first, may I ask for Anissa help with Ramadan respect? We have a 4-unit apartment that I live in, and my next door neighbor is practicing Ramadan and has been for years. And I want to know how best to support. In years past, I've even not cooked really, really good smelling food during the day to be nice.
Yeah, that's so sweet.
And so I'm just thinking, how can I offer maybe food kindness when he eats later in the day?
Yeah, that's actually such a great question, Joan, because, you know, I grew up in India, and Ramadan in India is extremely different from how we celebrate or process the month of Ramadan here in the U.S. Because in our in the home countries, Ramadan is very much a complete community event, right? So when you're breaking your fast,
right.
everybody is either, you know, either I'm in your home, you're in my home, we're all exchanging foods, we're exchanging, you know, and then there's, you know, time to hang out and pray together, all of that kind of stuff. So it's a very communal thing, and shops are open late at night, you know, kids are running around, all that stuff. And here, a lot of that actually just becomes inside your home. You're doing it very, you know, sort of within the four walls of your home, because it's not a huge community. And you're kind of going through Ramadan regardless of what else is happening outside, right? So I think a great way would be to actually bring him an iftar meal, you know, or offer to share an iftar meal with him or this family who's your neighbor. I think that's something that we really enjoy doing, like when we're breaking our fast, having our friends over, having the kids' friends over, so that so they can be this feeling of community and, you know, togetherness. And it doesn't have to be anything
elaborate.
It's just the idea of just being together. It's about building community.
All right, Joan.
I wish I could do that. He is strict enough in his faith that it's uncomfortable for him to speak directly with me.
Sure, maybe just give
me,
you know,
really
send him some fruit.
Okay.
Yeah, that
fruit.
Could be. Yeah.
All right, Joan. Thank you very much. 800-348-2551. Another
dates.
Call.
Dates is a good thing.
And we'll talk about that in a moment and the significance of dates. Let's go to Peter in Albany. Peter, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, I had a question. I'm referencing your book, Easy Moroccan Cooking, and a lot of the recipes, well, some of the recipes call for a spice mixture called Rasa Hanou.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but my question is there are a lot of companies that sell it, you know, online, et cetera. And I've noticed that, like, I have several in my pantry. One is Rasa Hanou, that's made in Turkey. And another one, I believe, is made in Saudi Arabia.
Mm.
And I guess one of them, the Turkish one, is a very light brown, where the other one is a very bright red. So it's like, is there like a different type of mixture of spices that make it so different from one area
Absolutely.
To another?
Well, Peter, thank you for getting my book. there is a Ras Al Hanou recipe in the book as well. So you could, you know, create your own Ras Al Hanou.
So we didn't get that far in the book.
So
no,
Ras Al Hanou.
I actually make...
Oh, let me just explain Ras Al Hanou.
I make a lot of recipes. Yeah.
Go ahead. Thanks. Somebody go. Anissa, how about you?
Okay. So Ras Al Hanou really in Arabic translates to head of a spice shop. So every spice shop owner has his, you know, his version of this seasoning blend, and usually it can have anywhere from 10 to 15 to 20 different spices and different various recipes. So every Ras Al Hanou that you will get will probably be different because mine is very different.
It's very good.
And it's very good. The recipe that's in the book, I kind of created and tested it to be something that would be very easy for a home cook to actually put together. The recipe of Ras Al Hanou that we use in the restaurant is different than the one that's in the book.
Interesting. Why?
Just more complicated ingredients that you might not necessarily find.
Secret proprietary recipe for your restaurant?
Yeah, and my 12-year-old daughter at the time was like, are you really giving away all your secrets?
Aha! She's another born executive.
Another born CEO, yes.
All right.
But, you know, the reason really was so that you would be able to create this recipe easily in your home.
Peter, thanks a lot. Now, we're going to take a break in 3 minutes. Anissa Waheed is our guest. And really, ostensibly, at the beginning of the show, we were going to talk about the foods and traditions of Ramadan. And here it is now, almost 20 of. So before we do that, let's talk about not eating. Let's talk about the importance of fasting to Ramadan and what that means.
Yeah. Well, so the month of Ramadan, observing Muslims don't eat from sunrise to sunset. There's some exceptions to this rule. If you're pregnant, if you're ill, you need to take medications. You're traveling, valid reasons that you wouldn't be fasting. But after the age of maybe 13, 14, most practicing Muslims are fasting for that month, and the idea is. You wake up before sunrise, you have a hearty breakfast, hydrate yourself, get your tea, your coffee, whatever it is that you need, and then you basically start your fast at sunrise until sundown. And that means no food, no liquids, no water, nothing really can pass through your lips, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, it's been going on for about 1,400 years.
And this is a month. This is a
it's an month. Entire month. It's an entire month of understanding, your own spirituality, understanding self-discipline, understanding how people who choose not to be hungry and thirsty of their own free will, what does that feel like? So it's really like gives you an understanding of, what the have-nots go through. It's a time when I think, especially for me when I fast, it's really a time of self-reflection. It removes, because you're not so focused on what you're going to be eating or drinking for the next, 10, 12 hours, you have a lot more time to think about a lot of other things. And so it's definitely a time for reflection. It's a time for community building, family gathering. And it really changes the family dynamics that entire month.
That's so interesting. When you were a kid, how did you feel about it? And now that you have kids and they're getting into it, what are you learning and what are you seeing about
that? It's really, when I was a kid, most of my time was in India. I loved it because it was the entire month is a time of festivities and it's time of eating. And, I've brought some of the food that we would typically eat during Ramadan. And there's certain things that are only done during Ramadan. So you're kind of waiting all year for this. And then at the end of the 30 days, there's a huge, big feast and, sort of a party. And so you're always looking forward to that. So it's really a month of kind of culturally, religiously, it kind of like marks your territory, if you will. Right.
Was
as
it tough,
a Muslim.
Though, when you were very young, was it tough to have that discipline?
No, it's not, because it's an intention that you set. And, I see my daughters go through this. And I was very surprised when my daughter Zoya first said she wanted to do it, which was 3 years ago. She's 14 now. She's turning 15 in a week. So when she first said it, I was very surprised because, for me doing it in India or my siblings, it's part of the culture, right? It's
right.
No different than what we would do as everybody for the month of December is shopping, right? Because it just becomes part of your culture. So for me, it was like, oh, my friends are doing it, my cousins are doing it, my classmates are doing it. It's a whole community thing. But when Zoya talked about it, I was really surprised because it's not a huge, community that she's part of. And so that has started a lot of conversations for us in our home, which probably we wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah.
We've talked about, the aspects of even today, she sent me an email from school just about how her day is going with fasting and what she's thinking about and how that feels and all of that stuff. So I think it's great. I think it's a great time for us to connect in a way that we wouldn't normally might have done.
So 12 hours, breaking the fast must be pretty fun. And you have
it's
brought
great.
Some food. So let's take a break. 800-348-2551. The great Anissa Waheed is with us today. And we're going to have some food now coming up. Vox Pop, it's Food Friday. Ray Graff with you, joined today by Anissa Waheed of Tara Kitchen. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We began the show with a premise that we would talk about the food and traditions of Ramadan. We got into business because I always do that when Anissa is here because she's a genius. Now, we're about to break the fast.
Yes.
There's a specific order for this. Tell me about it.
Across the Muslim world, you would break your fast with dates. This is something that, you know, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, did 1400 years ago. And this is something that pretty much every Muslim that I know, you know, traveled to many, 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 many countries, I have seen across the globe is something that's very traditional. So we open our fast with a date, some fresh water, and then, you know, you sort of, then it starts to go into the local food, culture, and variety of things. So in, for example, in Pakistan, where my husband's from, you probably have some sort of samosa, a pakora, which I don't have here, some sort of snacky bits that you kind of, you know, so you don't want to rush into eating a big meal right away.
Especially after not eating all that
time. Yeah, and it's surprising because you don't feel like rushing into a big meal right away. You kind of have to like let your hunger bloom.
I love that phrase. Let your hunger bloom.
So you do the dates, you do the water, and then typically you hydrate yourself with another kind of drink. So I brought Ruh Hafza for you.
What is this?
Ruh Hafza is hugely popular in the subcontinent. It's a rose petal drink.
Rose petal?
Yeah. Okay. So it's got rose petals, it's got different types of... In its current iteration, it has a lot of sugar. But originally, it was really meant as a herbal refresher. So it had lots of fruits and some herbs. And
I gotta say, it's pretty good.
Right?
Yeah.
So I made it today for you just with water, but there are many ways to do it. You could do it with ice cream. You could do it with milk and do a shake with it, you know, all different things. So that's very, very, very traditional in our part of the world.
So how do you get the rose? You grind up the rose petals?
Yeah, you grind up the rose petals.
And there's honey in here. I think I can taste honey.
Yeah, there's some honey. Yep, different things.
Mm,
and
delicious.
That's been a part of Indian tradition for, you know, over 70, 80 years, from what I understand. Ruh Hafza was invented by an Indian chemist, I think sometime in the 20s or 30s, and then that kind of has continued.
Very good.
So after that, you're probably going to have an appetizer-like thing, so a samosa, or I brought some bregrir here today, which are Moroccan thousand-hold pancakes.
Oh,
do you see all the
little... Yeah, look at those holes.
Isn't that great?
I thought it was a sponge.
I know. This is like a really...
Oh, what's the thing on the bottom? I'm sorry. Is that a sponge?
They're both...
Those are the pancakes.
These are the pancakes.
What's on top? The little...
This is called harsha.
Okay.
It's a little semolina bread that's made on a pan.
I see.
You can eat it with some jam or, you know, some honey. So you would do that.
So you would do a samosa maybe in your household
first. Yeah, some sort of an appetizer.
First.
Yeah.
What is this?
Okay, so that is extremely traditional in Hyderabad and in India also. It's called Haleem.
May I try?
Yes, please.
Okay. Haleem.
I made it a little bit less spicy for you guys. It's kind of a porridge made with wheat, two, three different types of lentils, a little bit of rice. It has goat meat in it. Obviously, some spices, onions, cilantro, ginger. It's
crazy good.
I've been cooking that since like 9 this morning.
And you, it's, really?
Yeah.
Okay, a savory porridge is
exactly,
the way to go.
Exactly.
This is great.
And it's very nutritious. It's healthy and it, you know, kind of sustains you. So this is a huge part of tradition in Hyderabad. In fact, not just the Muslims. Everybody in Hyderabad,
comfort food, clearly,
is eating Haleem during Ramadan. It's huge, huge, huge. In Morocco, harira, which is the soup that I brought here.
Oh, look at that.
This has chicken, chickpeas, rice, lentils.
How do you get the orange color?
Tomatoes.
Is it orange? Or I'm a little colorblind. Is that correct?
Like reddish, yeah. It's got spices and...
Thank you.
Tomatoes in there. This is also a huge part of Ramadan.
What's this called?
Harira. I often like to refer to the harira as the soup that launched my brand, because this is the soup that I started selling at the farmer's market, which really sort of went viral and people started coming. It was the soup, the Haleem. I used to sell all the stuff at the farmer's
market.
You
make all this?
Yeah.
You're so good. Oh, my gosh.
I have been cooking for a year or two.
I know that. But, I mean, you do have people who work for you. All right, let's go to the phones very quickly here. Rafi and Poughkeepsie, you're on.
Hello there.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? Yeah, you sound great. And I just joined in about 20 minutes ago, a little late. But I heard you were mentioning the cookbook.
Yeah.
Can you give me some information?
Yeah, absolutely. You can get it on Amazon. I think a lot of local cookbooks also carry it. Barnes & Noble has
That's good.
It.
Let's promote the local stores
a
little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
I agree.
But what's the name of the book?
Oh, it's called Easy Moroccan Cookbook.
Easy Moroccan Cookbook.
Yes.
Okay. I hope it's easy. Okay. And
it's very easy. The recipes should not take you more than 20 to 30 minutes. We tested them across the country with different age groups before we actually made the claim.
Yeah.
You will love it.
But you know, Rafi, not for nothing.
What's your last name?
Wahid. Anissa Wahid.
Wahid. Not for nothing, though, Rafi. It's easy for her, but it may not be easy for me or you. But, you know, you give it a shot, my friend.
You give it a shot and then call me back next time.
I've tried some of the Moroccan food. I made some Moroccan food before.
Cool.
A little couscous, some things like that. You know, the harira sounds good. Is that in the cookbook?
Yes, of course. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Sounds great.
Appreciate
the
call, buddy. Let's see. Miriam writes in. How to tenderize canned grape leaves. I'm making stuffed grape leaves. I've tried several brands of canned grape leaves, blanching before stuffing for 5 minutes. But after cooking 45 minutes, they're still tough. Any tips?
Oh, I can't say that I've ever done anything with grape leaves.
No?
Not necessarily a part of...
Well, you get around. I mean,
you get. Yeah, I love eating grape leaves.
All right, fair enough.
There is not a grape leaf, I'm not going to like.
You made Chinese food and French food during the pandemic, and I didn't even know about it.
So she's getting canned grape leaves, and they're not tender enough?
I don't know.
That's fascinating.
Well, I'm sorry, Miriam, on that one. Kevin in Pittsfield says, just wanted to say my fiancé and I love Tara Kitchen. We came in for dinner to celebrate our engagement and purchase of a house and had one of the best meals I've had in years. Thank you for bringing Moroccan culture and cuisine to the Northeast.
Oh, thank you so much, and congratulations.
You get engaged and buy a house on the same day.
Yeah,
that's quite a day.
That's amazing.
All right, so let's get back to what we were doing here.
Yes, so you've tried the harira.
By the way, where are the dates from?
Oh.
Delicious.
They're Mesrul dates from Palestine.
They're so good.
I was really excited to see that.
They're the real McCoy.
Yeah, I was really excited to see that in the market and get them. So... yeah, so what do you think of the harira? Like I said, the harira is what, you know, kind of launched us.
I love it. And I had something like, you've been on so many times.
Yeah, I'm sure at some point you've had the harira.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's a very, very popular soup for us, you know, across the board.
It might be really messy to do, but can I try a little of that thousand hole pancake?
No, you have to.
Okay. Yeah. Well, listen,
absolutely.
I follow orders then. This is great. Okay.
It's got a little bit of honey butter in there.
So, again, we started with dates. We had water. Mm-hmm. Then I had this with the rose petal. What's it called?
Rufsa.
Okay.
Yeah.
The order is important?
The order is important, you know, because you're trying to follow not only the steps of
grab a knife.
What were done for 1,400 years ago, but
right.
also you slowly want to reintroduce your body to eating after having been fasting for, you know, 12 hours. So if you kind of stuff your face immediately, you're going to have a crash. Usually what people will do is they'll break the fast with the dates, the milk, or, you know, the water, have a little snack. They'll actually go pray. They'll pray the Maghrib prayer and then come back and do the dinner and, you know, so on and so forth.
You know, it seems like 1,000+ years of tradition.
Yeah.
Also based on science to some extent.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's so many health benefits to fasting, not just, you know, obviously
this is delicious.
We're doing it, you know, there's a huge spirituality aspect of this, but there are also lots of health benefits to fasting and modern day science. I'm no doctor and I don't know enough to actually
talk
to it.
But you don't have to be.
Yeah.
The foods that you bring, I'm sure, are either intentionally or unintentionally engineered to get you through that fast.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, the proteins that we're using, the cooking styles, all of it, you know, it's like hundreds and hundreds of years of history that's kind of developed this, right? And again, to me, it's also really fascinating that in Morocco, harira, which is, you know, the food to have during Ramadan, wouldn't exist the way it is today had it not been for travel and, you know, migration and people going around the globe, right? A huge part of making a harira is the spices and the tomatoes. Well, you wouldn't have had that maybe 200-300 years ago before tomatoes were introduced to this part of the world. So,
and if you think about it, that is a fine allegory for your restaurant and your philosophy.
Absolutely. And even Haleem. So Haleem actually, although is now hugely popular in
it's
India,
so good.
It's actually from the Middle East. It's a dish called haris, which is cracked wheat cooked for a long time with meat. And, you know, that's sort of a fortifying, hearty dish that the people would use to travel through the desert and consume it. That traveled through Middle East, through Persia, coming to into India, and then you add all of the spices and the Indian knowledge of tempering and all of that type of stuff, and then you get this dish haleem. So this is, you know, it's traveled thousands of years and gone through all parts of the world to become what it is today. And to me, that is fascinating.
You know, your folks are tremendous cooks.
Yeah.
At what point, at what year did you say, all right, I'm taking over now?
Yeah, that's a great question. About 5-6 years ago, I took over Ramadan from my parents.
Oh, really?
So it's always at my house. This, and, you know, it's a big, big, big tradition for us. It's a big party. You know, the whole month there's stuff going on. And, of course, the end of the month, the celebration, it all happens at my house. And I love it. I love it.
Anissa Waheed, the thousand-hole pancake is fascinating. Tell me what's in it.
It's literally just semolina flour.
It's so good.
It's so good. Semolina, a little bit of yeast, some sugar, a salt, water, and then I sort of blitz it in a... there's a recipe for this in the book, too. This is
a Moroccan dish?
This is a Moroccan dish. It's a great snack. It's a great breakfast pancake, obviously, but my kids love it. It's an easy snack to kind of eat and digest and all of that stuff. And eating it with the honey butter. And I love all the little, you know you are a baguette expert if you can get your 1,000 holes.
Do you have to count them?
I haven't ventured into that yet.
I saw about 600. I don't know.
Every time I have a successful baguette, I take a picture.
Do you really? Do you always do the counting in later years? Anissa Waheed, you're an amazing individual. It is so much fun to spend time with you. Let's talk once again about this program that you're working on and where you hope to be in a year's time with this.
I really hope that is something that we can kind of bring into the schools, at least in the school district that is closest to my heart, which at the moment is Niskayuna,
right.
You know, where my kids are and my kids' friends are. We want to bring some way, shape, or form of this into the schools by this fall. Like I said, I'm working with my friend Mike Feierstein, to maybe potentially we have the opportunity to pilot something like this at a school that he's already done some anti-bullying campaign in Albany in. I want to be, this is almost sort of like, I've now been doing food for 20 years. And, you know, as I think about how I'm growing and changing as a person, as a mom, as a business person, all of that stuff, I think one of the things that I really think about is how can I bring some sort of a impact through food to help bring people together. You know, I know we do this as a restaurant because that's such a great space for people to come, enjoy, eat. But in some ways, it's also a very transient thing. I want to have this conversation with our young adults who are, you know, going to be our leaders, our presidents, our politicians, our next chef, all of those things. And I hope that I can somehow turn this conversation around xenophobia using food in a positive way.
It's such a great goal. You're enhancing humanity with great food. You know, but, well, in theory, if it works,
you got
a big road ahead. It's going to be a steep climb.
It definitely is going to be a steep climb. You know, I've talked a lot to kids about this. I've talked about, and again, you know, the idea is not to go in and talk to them about this as an adult. Don't talk at them. Yeah. I want them to get involved. And I think also for kids in general, aside from all of this stuff, kids really should know where does their food come from and what is that about and, you know, what we should and shouldn't be eating and all of those kind of things.
Anissa Waheed, we're out of time, my friend. How do people find out more about your comings and goings and doings?
Follow me, Chef Anissa, on Instagram. Everything and anything is on there. You know, the website, all the social media handles, Tara Kitchen on Facebook, that kind of stuff.
All right.
Tara Kitchen Tribeca, yeah.
Well, you're on again in a few months. I'm sure there'll be 8 million more things to talk about. Support comes from Clock Estate, Hudson, New York, and Earth to Glass Brandy Distillery, and destination that features tourist tastings, fine dining, and a hilltop view of the northern Catskill Range, clock-estate.com. And The Hungry Chicken, an old-fashioned country store, breakfast sandwiches, pies, pastries, coffee, candles, and a plethora of local crafts. Route 5S, Schenectady, across from Kiwanis Park, hungrychickenfarmmarket.com. Okay, thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Anissa Waheed. Thanks to Zach Malloy. Thanks to Barb King. Thanks to everybody. Have a good weekend.